readings from St. Paul's letter and from Luke's gospel to continue right where we left off last week. So my homily today is going to be kind of a continuation of what I was talking about last week, just so you know. Last week I talked a little bit about order versus chaos and a little bit about storytelling. So they end up in here too. So after Jesus, in this synagogue here, after he sets down the scriptures, after he finished reading them, he begins to tell a continuation of the story. So here's what Isaiah said, you know, in that passage last week. He sets it down and he says, "Today this scripture passage is fulfilled and you're hearing it." As if what's happening here and now is now a continuation of that story. So, hearing Jesus say this, and hearing everything else that he then says, what happens to this crowd that are gathered, you know, on this Sabbath for prayer? They're confused at first, and eventually they're angry, and eventually they want to throw him off a cliff. Because that's what you do to your hometown boy who makes good. To a certain extent, this is understandable. I mean, not the attempted murder thing, but to a certain extent, this is understandable. The people there at that synagogue that day, they were gathered to hear the tradition, to hear the stories that make up their whole cultural history. And they weren't expecting anything new to be added to it. But here's the thing about tradition. Tradition is what it is because over time and organically, new things become added to it without necessarily entailing the removal of the old stuff. New things happen that are in continuity with that tradition. So I'm sure each of you can call to mind things that were part of your family tradition or religious tradition or cultural tradition, town, village, place you grew up, tradition, national tradition. And I'm sure you can think of those things, and I'm sure you can think of those things that you missed, that you once did, or that were once part of the tradition but aren't anymore. I'm sure you can think of things that you're really glad we don't do anymore, and isn't it nice that we've moved past those some things? I think the same would go for these Israelites, these people here. Some of them eventually join in the new development that Jesus brings on, and some people miss the stuff or think that some of the old stuff isn't being respected enough. Between the people and Jesus here in that synagogue that day, there's a bit of a conflict. In terms of storytelling, though, conflict isn't a bad thing. In fact, it's very important. Conflict has its place in the order of a story. It usually happens kind of early on. The hero has to kind of figure things out. I mean, no one goes to a Star Wars movie to see the rebels live peacefully with the Empire and nothing ever happens. If there's no conflict, then you're not going to go see that. We want to see the rebels fight against evil and win, right? No one goes to a Rocky movie if there isn't a fight in it. You got to have that conflict. That's what makes a Rocky movie, right? You got to see the boxing match. So, this is how storytelling goes. Conflict. Every character in a story has conflict to encounter, and that's also how life goes, honestly. Because conflict is clarifying. By getting into a good, honest argument, we get to know who's on which side of what, you know? We get to know what we're really fighting for. What are the issues that are important to each fighter? In addition to knowing what we're fighting for, you know, the issues, we also get to know who is fighting. We get to know who fights dirty, who fights cleanly, who is a good fighter, or who isn't, and who just flails their arms about, or shouts out, you know, arguments that don't pertain to the argument, you know. And who can get right to the point of the issue, who knows right where their enemy's weaknesses are, you know. You get to know who the people are who are fighting. This is why conflict is good. It's true in storytelling. It's true in life. Conflict doesn't need to be avoided. And indeed, Jesus doesn't shy away from it. We know that his ultimate goal is peace. But the only way even for Jesus to get to that peace is through the conflict. This is why, also, in a way, blessed are the peacemakers. History teacher at seminary said, blessed are the peacemakers. They're spit upon from both sides. Because they stand in the middle of a conflict trying to bring peace, and it seems like that they're just adding more conflict. But their ultimate goal, of course, is peace. Even if they're stuck in the middle of this fight. So what's the conflict here with Jesus, between these people and Jesus? The people are hearing from one of their hometown boys, right? this carpenter's son from the guy down the street. They used to see him in this synagogue regularly. And they're hearing him say some strange things. They're hearing him say that maybe that he's perhaps a prophet, or maybe more than a prophet. They're hearing him say that sometimes God doesn't bring healing to his people. You know, all these lepers, none of them were healed, but that foreign one was. You know, all these widows, they weren't taken care of, but that foreign widow was at the time of these two prophets that God sent to take care of them. Sometimes God doesn't take care of his people, but they're hearing him say. And they hear him say that, these words from Isaiah are applying to him specifically. This prophet who lived many, many, many years ago, who's part of the historical tradition, they're hearing Jesus say, Isaiah's talking about me. So they're angry. And they're angry enough to try to throw him off a cliff. The people are fighting for a few things. First, a man does not claim that he is God. So, that's a good thing to fight for. It makes sense. Second, the people of the synagogue here, they're concerned for the stability of their tradition. This guy doesn't get to reinterpret the whole history of Israel and the whole history of the prophets. He doesn't get to reimagine this stuff, reinterpret this stuff. The tradition needs to be stable. Again, a good thing to be fighting for. Maybe not to the point of murder, of course, but, you know, a good thing to fight for. But from Jesus' point of view, what's he concerned for? He's concerned for the right understanding of the tradition. What has the tradition always been pointing towards? Well, it's always pointing towards the Messiah. And he's the Messiah. Second, I think he's fighting for an understanding of the truth. He's got to stand his ground, and he's not going to lie to them that he's not the Messiah. There's a conflict, a very understandable conflict, between the people of the synagogue and Jesus. But it isn't one that couldn't be overcome. I mean, if they hadn't, again, tried to throw him off a cliff. It isn't one that couldn't be overcome. And eventually this conflict, it'll reach the point where the truth of who Jesus is will be obvious for all to see. It'll be very apparent when he's on the cross and at his resurrection. So really there's no resolution to this conflict today. You gotta wait till Good Friday and then Easter Sunday for this conflict to really reach its apex and have its resolution. Similarly, St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians here, it's also rooted in conflict. Paul had to write to these people about the conflict that they were having in their local church. They were infighting about a few things. Specifically, and here's the list, unchristian social division at worship and at meals, relationships with the non-Christians, with the pagans, sexual immorality, and competing authorities in the community. Who's in charge? Who gets to do what? That's where the conflict was. So Paul's got to write this letter to them as their founder, as their pastor. He's got to be firm. So he addresses some of these issues head on. And he also lists out, in the last week's reading, of course, again, because it's a continuation, he lists out the gifts that each one of these people have. Some people have gifts of this, and healing, and administration, and love, and whatever, and tongues, whatever, all that, the whole list. And he explains that all of these gifts contribute to the ordered whole. So he's got to understand that each of these people have their contributions to make, and that they can't, they're not supposed to be in conflict with one another. He's trying to explain. And so he has to encourage peace. He has to encourage love, which is what this big, long love is patient, love is kind poem is about, of course. Now, a teacher of mine, a different teacher, not my history teacher, another teacher at seminary, was quick to point out that this poem about love is not about married love, even though everybody uses it at weddings. It's about how people who speak in tongues aren't better than everybody else. That's what he would always say. There are many gifts, but none of them outrank any of the other gifts. They are all given by the same Spirit. And they're all meant to contribute to the ordered whole, not be in conflict with the whole, or with the other parts of the whole. Love is patient. Love is kind. Without love, I'm a banging gong or a clashing cymbal. It's a musical analogy. The people of the church, in fact, all the parts of creation, are meant to be in harmony. The great melody that God produces. What keeps everything in harmony is love. Every instrument has its, but they can very easily become cacophonous, just noisy with each other, unless there's some way to make them all harmonize. Love is that harmonizing factor. The role of the conductor or the composer, especially if they're the same person, to direct the order of all of those different instruments, all those different parts. there are internal rules that govern the music, the order that that composer has put in there. And, you know, the tempo, the volume, the notes, the chord progressions, if they're not followed, then they lead to noise and just chaos. The conductor has to, and the composer and the conductor has to communicate all of this, this order to each of the instruments so that when they use their gifts, when they make their sounds, it isn't just noise, but is harmonious. It's the love that undergirds all of the other gifts. Love is the gift that everybody gets. All the other gifts, some people get this, some people get that, some people get this other thing, but love is one of those gifts that everyone gets. And it organizes and brings order to all of our distinct roles in our life, in our world. Tolkien, in J.R.R. Tolkien, in anyone read The Silmarillion? It's not a particularly popular book. It's kind of backstory to Lord of the Rings. In that, he fleshes out the whole Lord of the Rings universe, and he beautifully expands upon this image of creation as music. It's a beautiful passage. And he also explores what happens when discord is introduced into it. So I do recommend, it's a beautiful little passage in that book. But in fact, I think it's a whole chapter. Let us, even when we have to be in conflict, maintain that must undergird all of it, so that even through the clarifying effects of conflict, we will be able to come into harmony with one another.